The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliates of Fuel Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Hey, Seahawks fans, before we get into the show this week, wanted to let you know that the news of Jermaine Kearse coming back to the Seahawks had not yet broken when we recorded the show. So expect us to talk a little bit about whether or not Kearse should come back, our feelings about that. You'll hear that through the show. I left it in. But yes, Jermaine Kearse re-signs with the Seahawks. He'll be back for 3 years. Great news for those of us who like big catches, big plays, especially in the postseason, like this one, to send the Seahawks to Super Bowl 49.
Out of a shotgun, they tilted the field back in the Seahawks' favor. Lynch in the backfield in a pistol formation. Wide receivers to either side. Russell takes the snap, drops back. He's going to throw down the middle. He's got a man. The ball is caught.
Game over,
it
baby.
Is a touchdown. The game is over. The Seahawks are going back to the Super Bowl in Glendale. What a catch in the end zone. It is Kearse, 35 yards. A long day for Jermaine, and he makes the game-winning reception in the end zone. They are going nuts at CenturyLink.
Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, your Seattle Seahawks podcast by 12s for 12s. With your hosts, Adam Emmert.
You know what you do when life gives you lemons? You don't make lemonade. You kick life in the balls, and you demand it gives you something better, like bacon.
Bacon's delicious.
And Brandon Schultz.
If you want to put your money toward helping this team win, buy a ticket to the game on Sunday and bring your adult voice and scream your adult brains out. That will make 10 times more the difference.
Go Hawks!
Be on a quest to own the West. We make the ground shake on game day 12-10. Yeah, he's feeling it, he's vital. The Seahawks coming to take division titles. We are Coach Carroll, cause he's in. I'm in, we all in.
Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast Free Agency Edition. As we're getting underway into the new year of the NFL season, talking some free agency with my good buddy Adam Emmert.
Hey man, how's it going today?
Hey, it's another day. It's another day, and the Seahawks.
It's a big day, man. The free agency is in full swing. You know, we already know who's won the Super Bowl this year. The Dolphins and the Giants are going to the Super Bowl. They've won the offseason. Like, this is it's fun. This is fun right now.
the most fun I had yesterday was informing Jared that the Broncos had lost Brock Osweiler, and watching the hopefulness of him. Well, not the hopefulness, but just the despair of losing their potential franchise quarterback to him. Then thinking that, you know, that Colin Kaepernick could be the answer. And so that to me was fun. Actually knowing a Broncos fan that just after they, you know, the highest high of winning the Super Bowl. And then now just how much longer, you know, just only a month after that. And to know that you're losing your potential. You lose Peyton Manning to retirement. Then you lose Brock Osweiler. And and then he's like, well, we have a pretty solid third stringer.
Yeah, right.
It made me laugh.
And that lets all you Seahawks fans know that with losing a couple guys like we have over the last day or so, it could be a lot worse.
Right.
It could be a lot worse.
You could be
justifying the fact that your GM wouldn't pay the future of your franchise second tier quarterback money. He wouldn't do it. And now your hope is either Colin Kaepernick or RG3. That's not the boat you're in, Seahawks fan. This is a lot better for us. And we'll get into some of the departures, some of the guys they've re-signed, including an all-time Seahawk great that they re-signed. I mean, it may not be a long contract, but he's back.
But he's back. And people wanted him to return to Seattle. And so that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, and Cam Chancellor is apparently a peeping Tom. We'll get into that a little bit, or maybe not, or maybe he's just an entrepreneur.
Yeah,
and misunderstood. But Anyways, so a load of stuff to talk about. This is going to be a fun show today. I'm actually fired up.
I'm fired up to get talking about it. So let's get right into free agency and the big news yesterday, Adam. Three guys that I know. The good thing is I feel like we prepared folks on our last show to kind of know what to expect going into free agency, right? Know that a guy like J.R. Sweezy is going to be a tough guy to keep. A guy like Brandon Mebane is kind of a guy that could have gone either way, and he ends up going to the Chargers. Sweezy goes to the Tampa Bay Bucks. And then we lose Bruce Irvin to the Raiders, and that was a move that we all expected Bruce Irvin not to come back with the team last year. Maybe even saw the writing on the wall last year when they didn't pick up his option.
Absolutely. In the Bruce Irvin case, let's talk about that quickly first, because I think that was almost the most foregone conclusion out of these three guys,
mm-hmm.
was Bruce Irvin leaving. And when you think about it, the Raiders were $40 million underneath what you have to spend on the cap. That's not even to the cap. That's what they, the $40 million under what they needed to spend.
The mandatory spending, like the bottom.
The minimum.
The
that
minimum.
You're allowed as a team to spend on your payroll. And if that's the case, Bruce Irvin makes a lot of sense. He's relatively young. I mean, he's 29. I mean, he's getting up there. Yeah. I was surprised to read he was 29. But, you know, getting... But still relatively young.
That's kind of your prime age, I feel like, for a linebacker-type position.
Yeah, the next 2 to 3 years should be your prime. But a guy who's... He's not elite at anything. He's very good at a lot of things.
Yeah, versatile.
Yeah, he's versatile, but he's not elite at any one thing. But you end up paying him like an elite guy because you're one of those teams that has to spend. And that's good for the players. And keep getting them checks, Bruce. Like, I'm happy for him. Gets to reunite with Ken Norton Jr., a guy that knows how to use him, that was with him during his first couple years. And I think between him and Khalil Mack, the Raiders did very well by themselves there. But with the fact that the Seahawks, our salary cap situation is completely different,
mm-hmm.
there's no way you're going to compete with the Raiders on the open market to keep a guy like Bruce, or to keep a guy, say, Bruce Irvin, you know?
Sure.
And it's
you wanted to say a Bruce Irvin, didn't you?
I caught myself,
and
man.
You caught yourself. Well done, sir.
I did it for you. I did it for you. But yeah, so I'm not surprised. I don't think many of us are surprised. Sure, all bummed. I think we all like Bruce.
We did, yeah. No, for sure.
Yeah, and wish him nothing but the best. But there's one thing that's constant in this league, and it's change. And if you are the type of person that can't handle change, you may find a different sport, because this isn't how it's designed.
Well, you know, I was talking to my brother the other day, and this has really been the most that he's followed the Seahawks over the last few years. He's been a Seahawks fan for a while, but kind of the most where he's gotten to know the players. And when you feel connected to the players, it does make it hard when a guy leaves. You know, a guy like Brandon Mebane, who's been with the Seahawks for so long, you know, we all know that belly roll when he gets up and does his sack dance. And now we're going to be seeing that on the Chargers now, and it's kind of a bummer. But at the same time, you know, it's part of the business, and you know there's guys that are going to come up and be those guys. There's going to be a lot of great stories of guys still, you know, the Seahawks are still going to find guys on the defensive line and move them over to the offensive line. So losing a guy like J.R. Sweezy, yes, it's a bummer, and it's a great story of a guy at NC State. You played with Russell Wilson, but played on the opposite side of the ball, and then goes to play, you know, actually blocking Russell Wilson. It's a cool story, but there's still going to be stories like that.
Absolutely. That's the thing is, you know, with every ending, there's a new beginning, right? So you get to learn about some new people that you might enjoy even more, or you might enjoy those little nuanced stories. But as far as the business aspect of it and the play on the field, the guys that left, I mean, we're talking Irvin, Mebane, and Sweezy. Look, Sweezy got $6.5 million a year. $6.5 million a year.
Yeah.
There's no way. Like, there's no way that I deem him worth that. I just don't.
Right.
There's a bunch of other guys that are 80% of Sweezy that you can pick up for $1 million to $2 million a year.
Yeah.
And not only that, you've got one of them on your roster who's playing on a, what, fifth round rookie deal?
Fourth round deal, yeah.
Yeah. So the idea that you're going to pay Sweezy that kind of money, no thank you. No, thank you. I mean, if the Bucks want to grossly overpay, go ahead. And that's being a smart GM by John Schneider.
Well, and that's where you know that you can maybe spend a little extra money to keep a guy like Jeremy Lain, because Lain was one of those guys that we felt like, as Seahawks fans, you wanted to have that spot locked up, because we saw what happened last year. And we thought that Kerry Williams could make the transition to a Seahawks defense, and you know, he was a nice player in the past. He had a rough year with the Eagles, but coming in on the Seahawks team last year, you felt like maybe he could get back to that, the way he played as a member of the Baltimore Ravens, and be that guy to fill in opposite of Richard Sherman. And we know Jeremy Lain can do it because we've seen it. So feeling like, you know, locking him up, and it looks like his salary is coming in at just under $6 million a year for over the next 4 years. You have that position now locked into a guy, if he can stay healthy, because we have seen issues with Jeremy Lain and staying healthy. But if he can stay healthy, you have that position locked up, and you have your Legion of Boom locked up.
Man, I am over the moon about the Jeremy Lain signing. I really am. And I'll tell you why. Every year you see salaries go up in the NFL, right? Look at what the Giants just paid Janoris Jenkins.
Yeah.
A number two, right? Like, he's a guy that the Rams valued lesser than Trumaine Johnson and
right.
let him walk. And he got paid big time money. I mean, it was a
shut
huge
down
contract.
Quarter money. Yeah.
You saw Byron Maxwell get that kind of money the year before. We watched Kerry Williams come in last year. Now, this is on last year's scale, gets paid $6 million a year to be your starting right corner, who's older and less talented than Jeremy Lain. Now, we're talking a year later where salaries have gone up even more, and you have a better alternative, a guy that's homegrown, a guy you know that replaced Kerry Williams at right corner,
mm-hmm.
that is going to be your starting right corner for the next 4 years at the same market price as last year.
Right.
That's a steal. That's an absolute steal. I think the injury history, while worrisome to a degree, also helped out a ton. And the fact that they were able to look, you have every member of this secondary from last year here. But at the end of last year, the same dudes. They're
right.
all here under contract, and they played really well going down the stretch. I'm stoked about the Jeremy Lain signing. That's a bargain for a starting right corner for the next 4 years going forward that you know is quality.
Yeah, no, I told myself if Jeremy Lain came in under $6 million a year, that would be a steal for the Seahawks. And I thought it would happen too, based off the fact that you look at the top 100 free agent lists. Jeremy Lain was not on any of those top 100 free agents list, which was a really big surprise for me just knowing and watching him. But I think, like you said, the injury history and the fact that he only played half the year, it really did kind of take him down under the radar, I think, of a lot of teams and a lot of fans.
It sure did. And look, you can't, like we said earlier, you can't keep everybody. So the idea that you lose Brandon Mebane maybe in the process, that allows you a little more cap room to where you can re-up Jeremy Lain.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the gives and takes of the business end of things. And look, there's going to be guys that we can find to replace Mebane too. I mean, we got Cam Thomas from the Steelers coming in. It sounds like today for a visit. He's like 6'4", 330.
Yeah.
And the idea that you could pair somebody like that alongside another re-signing, and I think was the better of the two nose tackles to sign, and that's Ataba Rubin.
Yeah, Ataba Rubin getting a deal done. He was the first member of the Seahawks to get a deal done right before free agency started, and once that happened, it did kind of lessen the sting once you found out that Brandon Mebane was leaving, because you had one of those two guys. You definitely wanted to keep one of those two guys on the defensive line for some continuity, for the talent they provide, you know, just those guys that can fill those gaps and stop the run.
And Ruben's still in his prime, whereas Mebane is on the downside of his career.
And you saw that in the contract that the Chargers gave him. They gave him essentially a 1 year, $5.5 million deal. Those next 2 years of his 3 year contract with the Chargers, not guaranteed. So it was, while it looked like a nice deal, 3 years, $12 million, really 1 year, $5.5 million guaranteed. And they could choose to cut him after that. It's kind of, I mean, it's a good deal for the Chargers, I think. And but I think maybe the Seahawks just weren't willing to match that initial year guaranteed money offer that the Chargers could offer.
Yep, absolutely. That's a great point there. The other thing with the Seahawks with moving on from Mebane, one of the deepest groups in this draft is defensive tackle.
Right.
And there's a bunch of guys that can really play. And the idea is that even though that you pick lower in each round, there's going to be guys there that you can find that can come in and be immediate starters. And to go along with a couple free agent signings, say, like Cam Thomas. Like, again, I heard this on Brock and Salk this morning, and I thought it was brilliant. They're like, did any of you know who Ataba Rubin was before he was brought in?
Right, no.
The Seahawks last
week? We didn't. No.
And it was a good point by them. And same thing this year. I mean, guys like Cam Thomas could be somebody that comes in and plays very well for you, and you're like, I didn't even know he existed before this.
That's part of the work that the Seahawks do in their front office. John Schneider, you know, they know who those guys are that are out there that can fit into the system that will bring, exactly what the Seahawks need to fit their type of scheme that they run on defense.
Exactly. So, sure, it hurts to lose these guys. I think maybe in some ways, the hardest thing to replace is Bruce Irvin. But again, you drafted that guy last year in Frank Clark. And yeah, Thomas on the
Frank
brain.
Thomas, the baseball player.
Yeah, the big hurt's going to come in and put some sacks down.
Lost some weight of Frank Clark, apparently. You've taken the weight off, and because I think he was playing upwards of 280 or two, he tweeted out a picture of him on a scale and dropped about 20 pounds. So that's what that's the rumor, is that Frank Clark may be filling that Bruce Irvin position.
Between him and Cassius Marsh, right? I mean, those are your guys there. And then, again, maybe draft a guy or maybe bring back Chris Clemons for a year to just be one more rotational guy on that defensive line.
Maybe.
Look, you're not looking at Chris Clemons to come in and be a difference maker.
Oh, no.
But for a guy to come in and play 5 to 10 snaps and be able to keep everybody fresh, that's
sure.
A great veteran minimum guy.
Kind of
right
like
there.
How O'Brien Schofield filled in along that defensive line from time to time, about 5
Absolutely.
To 10 snaps and could get you a little bit of production. Now, I think you're looking at maybe a mix of losing a guy like Bruce Irvin, who can play linebacker and also rush the passer. Don't forget, you have Kevin Pierre-Louis on the roster as well that can play that linebacker position. You know, a lot of speed. He can be back there in coverage. I don't think he was as great in coverage as Bruce was this last year, but still a guy who, with enough pieces, you can fill up, you can fill in, and for a player like Bruce Irvin leaving to go to the Raiders.
Yeah, so there's one or two ways you could go about it, right? You bring up KPL to be your weak side linebacker, and you move KJ Wright back over to the strong side. KJ Wright can play anywhere. He's awesome.
That's
the brilliance of locking him up before right. He ever hit the free agent market. I mean, he's a fantastic Swiss Army knife of a linebacker, and he's going to be awesome at whatever position you put him at.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way you can go about it. The other thing is, don't forget, Frank Clark also did play some linebacker in college.
Yeah.
He's a guy that can cover a little bit. He's a guy that can do Bruce Irvin things. He has that kind of athleticism. So, yeah, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, it's tough to see your guys go, but there are contingency plans, and it does feel like the Seahawks are in control a little bit. Like, aren't you kind of glad that you haven't seen the Hawks go out and be like the Dolphins and, you know, pay Mario Williams and pay, you know, just pay everybody? Like, how often has that ever worked out? It doesn't. It puts you in cap hell, and it gives you, what, a two-game bounce and wins in that year? And maybe you go from 7-9 to 10-6 and are a wild card loss? And then what?
Yeah.
So I like the approach. You know, you let the guys go that you know you're going to have to, but you also keep yourself in position to re-sign some of your own, and they've done a good job of that so far.
No, it's gone from the years of Seahawks winning free agency to the years of Seahawks winning the draft, right? And that was one of the major storylines of this last week, is all the guys from that 2012 draft, Bruce Irvin, Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, Jeremy Lane. I mean, so many guys from that 2012 draft getting paid in this market, and guys who got paid last year. But just so, I think Jay Howard, who got paid for the with the Chiefs, was mm-hmm. part of that draft too. It and was. Just a ton of guys. That 2012 draft by the Seahawks has set this team up to be what it is. And as long as you're continuing to win the draft, even if it's winning a draft every 2 to 3 years, you don't have to hit on every single one. But if you can fill those pieces, get enough of those pieces in place that to be consistent enough through the draft, that's the key to success now at this point.
Absolutely. The John Schneider's drafting prowess has been great. And again, it looks a lot like Green Bay for years under Ron Wolf, right?
Sure.
A lot of
Baltimore Ravens. They're yep. very similar.
Very similar. And the Giants, honestly, very similar up until just this last year where Jerry Reese is trying to save his job. But, the idea is that the teams that do it right, they go about it in this manner. Now, does that mean that replacing Sweezy, Meebane, and Irvin are slam dunk locks and it's not going to be a downgrade with whatever you replace them with?
It could be a downgrade.
It absolutely could be. It's not perfect. It's not perfect. You got to... got to be able to weather some punches as a roster, and hopefully what you do is you say, okay, we find a guy to come in and take Brandon Meebane's spot that's maybe just a slight plus, or maybe two guys that are a slight plus over Meebane, mm-hmm. and then maybe it's a downgrade from Bruce Irvin, but then maybe you have a little bit of an upgrade over Sweezy, a guy that maybe does pass blocking too. That would be cool.
No, that'll never happen.
Right. So, some people start out with all this, the losses, and they're like, it's the end of the world, we're going to stink. And there's other people that are like, oh yeah, these guys are all bums, it'll be fine. The truth is somewhere in the middle, in the fact that, yeah, it hurts to a degree, but you can get through it as well. And I think we're in a good position to do that.
Well, that brings me to the one guy who hasn't been signed yet. And I think, with recording the show, Adam, and putting it out, especially the second day of free agency, there's that question of whether or not Russell Okung may be signed early. I think we're safe to say that it's probably going to be a little bit. Either he's going to re-sign with the Seahawks here in the next couple days, or it's going to be a couple weeks as he continues to test the free agent market. Because as we heard from Joel Corey, just yesterday, the start of free agency on Wednesday was the first day where teams could even talk to him because he didn't have an agent. And so it kind of puts him a little bit behind all the rest of the players because he was outside of that legal tampering window that everybody is talking about. And so it could be a little bit of time with him. But with J.R. Sweezy leaving and what we've seen kind of with the offensive line, it doesn't really feel so much. Now, we talked about the potential of maybe moving the right tackle over to the left side if Okung were to leave. But it kind of feels to me like Okung's an important piece just in terms of leadership, and that might be a guy that the Seahawks really push to re-sign in the next couple weeks.
Maybe.
Yeah?
I'm not as high on the idea of, unless you get him for the right price, it has to be a very team-friendly deal. Because between the toe, which is been a problem for years now,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't seem to be getting better.
Now the shoulder,
and the fact that he's not getting any younger. I mean, what is he, like 31 now? Is that right? I don't know. I'm spitballing here, but yeah. I know it.
He was signed in 2010.
Cool. I don't know how old he was then either.
I don't either. But, you think I keep up on everybody's age, Adam?
No, but I know
you had. I know you had Bruce Irvin's age right off the top of your head, but
yeah, I knew that one. But look, with Okung, he's a guy that's been around for a while, and we heard Pete Carroll talk about when do you know when it's time to move on from a guy, and he's like, well, it's when they don't quite recover from injuries like they used to, and Okung seems to be at that stage of his career.
Yeah,
and it'll be interesting to see what the market kind of comes to bear for him, especially with him representing himself. And I think part of the reason he's been slow to sign is, one, you talked about the free agency tampering period
mm-hmm.
that he wasn't allowed to participate in. And then secondly, being his own agent, when these offers and stuff come in, when he's negotiating with these teams, one of the resources that he has is to check with the NFLPA about some of the stuff and make sure that he's on the right track or make sure he understands things and all that. there's probably a little extra time that gets put into that as well, as he has to research certain clauses or things of that nature and get in touch with the NFLPA, have them get back with him. I think that slows down the process a little more too.
Sure.
And that may cost him some money in the end of it as well. I mean, as other guys get signed and, you know, there's not a lot more need out there at tackle. So if we could bring him back at a reasonable price, that's cool. But I'm more apt for, say, spending money on, like, Kelvin Beachum from the Steelers, who started 2 years ago for them, played very well, blew out his knee last year, mm-hmm. and had ACL surgery and all that, coming off an injury, but young. He's like 26 and was really good. But that's a guy you could get more or less on the cheap, or maybe at even the same price as Okung, and he's a young guy with upside.
Yeah, and Russell Okung, he's not old. 28, he'll turn 29 in October during the season. So but like you mentioned,
so he's 29.
No, he'll be 29 during. Yeah.
Oh, okay. The way you said that is like 28, 29. He turned in October during the season, like this last.
Oh
year.
No,
like,
he will turn 29 in the upcoming season.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So not super old, but at the same time, yeah, you do worry about just the injury concerns that have built up over the years with Okung and the fact that he hasn't played a full season.
No, he hasn't. Now, look, I really like him, the person. I really do. He's a freaking good dude.
From all accounts, he's a tremendous mentor to the other guys on the offensive line, the most senior guy on the offensive line. So when you talk about continuity and having a plan for moving forward, it just doesn't, to me, it doesn't feel like you have a solid backup plan in place like you did maybe with J.R. Sweezy.
Not an in-house candidate, no. But there are definitely guys on the free agent market, whether that's Donald Penn, who's still out there,
sure.
An older guy, older than Okung, but has proven to be a bit more durable. Jermon Bushrod is out there as well. Again, another older guy, but again, maybe somebody you don't have to pay a lot of money to. Andre Smith, a former really high draft pick that has underperformed at times in his career, but looked better during a contract year. Now, whether or not he carries that over, I don't know. But maybe he's like Carpenter and he finally put it together and it happened to be the contractor. You know, I mean, these are the things. But
so when you bring up Andre Smith, that would be a guy that you'd probably have at right tackle and then move Gary Gilliam over to the left tackle side, like
sure.
Folks have talked about. So yeah, there are options. It just, to me, I feel like having Okung there and keeping the leadership, having the experience in place, you know, maybe drafting a left tackle that in maybe the third or fourth round that you can kind of groom, because it seems to me that where the Seahawks are drafting at the end of the first round, it's not a place where you're going to find a left tackle who can start right away, I don't think.
You know, they've talked about a couple guys. There's a kid out of A&M that has a name that it was a little bit like...
Oh, that guy. Yeah, that guy.
Oh, come on now. He was it's a little bit like Obunguachu. Like, it's a name that, you know, is kind of something you've never heard before. It starts with a U. Gosh, I can't think of it for the life of me. But there's guys that are projected to be around by the end of the first round that can play. And... look, the number one guy for me at tackle that is projected to be either end of first round or in the second round is Jason Spriggs. This is a guy that at the combine, he was in the top five of four of the most important offensive lineman drills. And that's like three cone drill, the 20-yard shuttle, the 40, and the bench press. This guy's a stud. Mm-hmm. He's one of those kind of athletes like Sokoli was, only he actually played offensive line all through college. He could be really, really good. And he's got the same type of athleticism that the Seahawks covet. Now, that's a guy right there that, yeah, he could be very much available at the end of the first round.
I like the approach that you're taking and the thought that you're putting into this, Adam, but I think we all know, based on our experience, is that the Seahawks either trade away their first-round draft pick or they pick somebody that we've never heard of going into the draft.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, hey, look, the Seahawks always do things that we never expect, right? And by this point, we never expect them to draft, like, an offensive lineman that seems obvious. Maybe they'll do it this time.
Maybe they'll do it now. Yeah, now that they've all fooled us, now they'll go ahead and do something predictable.
Right, which is then now fooling you.
Right, exactly.
See, it's a double fool.
I like the way you think there.
Yeah, yeah. See, Schneider's sneaky like that. You don't know. You don't know. But yeah, so I mean, those are some possibilities with to fill in for some of the guys that left. We talked a little bit about the guys that we've been able to retain. I think it's been a pretty solid start to free agency for the Seahawks, considering where they are in the roster building process. You know, as a team, I'm excited about it. But there was one more acquisition, Brandon, that popped up the other day.
And, Marcus Burley. We talked about the restricted free agents, then, and Burley wasn't on that list. But it turns out they offered him a tender. That's exactly the guy that you're going to bring up, right?
Yes. No. No. He has less hair, this guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he played a whole different position. Another position. Was pretty good at it. Probably a Ring of Honor guy at the end of the day. And that is Matthew Hasselbeck. He's coming back to the team. But it's only for a day.
Now, I know there were reports weeks ago when it looked like he was going to be cut from the Colts, and a lot of fans were saying, hey, bring this guy in and back up Russell Wilson. And
neat story.
It is a cool story, and the more I thought about it, the more I thought it might be able to happen. Look, the Colts' offensive line last year was not that great. I think it was worse than the Seahawks' offensive line, and Hasselbeck came in, and he performed well enough to win the Colts a few games in relief duty for Andrew Luck, and I got to thinking, you know, maybe he could do that. Just, we don't want Russell Wilson to go down, but just to have him there just in case, kind of be in that mentorship role. There's not going to be any calls for Matt Hasselbeck to start over Russell Wilson or anything like that. But to have him on the team for one last year, now we don't get him for one last year, but we it looks like we'll get him for one day.
One day, and fitting for him, and one of the all-time great Seahawks. Really fun. The little tribute video that the Hawks did for him was great. If that didn't get you choked up as a Hawks fan that was following the team during that era, you're a heartless bastard. I mean, it really is great. One of my all-time faves, and just a guy that I just loved his whole demeanor. I loved the risk-taking with the way he played. Sometimes it was maddening, no doubt, but I loved it, man. I loved it.
No, he was one of the greats for the Seahawks. Like you mentioned, a clear Ring of Honor type guy, and the first Seahawks quarterback to take the team to a Super Bowl, to win him an NFC championship. We'll always remember Matt for that. There's a lot of other moments that I think we'll remember Matt for, and I know one that comes to mind for me is the moment where in the playoffs against the Packers and saying, we want the ball and we're going to score. You know, the mic picked it up in overtime as they were after they won the coin toss. The Seahawks win the coin toss, and Matt, to have him say that and to get it picked up on the mic, it's an endearing moment. Now we know that he threw an interception and the Packers ended up winning that game, but still a moment that we all remember Matt for, and it's just one of the great moments.
I know it was a loss, but every time I think about it, I smile.
I know, exactly.
You know? So I can't be mad about it.
No,
because it makes me happy.
It does. It does. And I was listening to the Dave Softy Mahler show yesterday, and he had Matt Hasselbeck on. He's the one that asked him about signing the one-day contract with Seattle to retire as a Seahawk. Matt said it was a no-brainer. And Softy asked him about his thoughts and kind of what he was thinking in that moment, going into that game, going into overtime, and kind of his mindset of why he said that we want the ball and we're going to score. And he had some interesting comments.
This is the team that I had just come from. I had so many good friends on that team. And we played him earlier in the year, and everyone told me, hey, control your emotions. And I did that, but I didn't play great. I didn't play inspired. We didn't play that well. And we went back, and we were a wild card team. And Mike the whole time was like, guys, you're good enough. You're good enough. I've coached great teams. You're good enough. You got to believe that you're good enough. And so for me, I went in, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to cut it loose. I'm going to have fun. And that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, that was one of the great lessons I learned from Brett Favre. Don't be a robot. Go out there, play with passion, play tough, play physical, have fun. And so we did that, and no one expected us to be in that game. I mean, they were surprised that we were a wild card team. Green Bay was probably upset that they were a wild card team, and we were in it. You know, we were in that game. And one of those captains was John Randall, who's just one of my all-time favorite teammates and a great guy and always fired up and fun, you know, really fun. And so one of my good friends, Ryan Longwell, who, you know, I was his holder and he ended his career in Seattle. He was out there. And so we were talking like kind of friendly trash talk, but like That's what it was. And partly, though, you know, for me, you know, I wanted to say that in front of John Randall. I wanted to say that in front of my teammates because, hey, we're good enough. We believe we got this. And as a Packer, you know, as a backup player in the Packer, I used to sit on the sidelines and just see how the opponents would be so intimidated coming into the Lambeau Field, the mystique, the tradition, mm-hmm. the cold weather, all of it. You know, the fact that they got to play against Brett Favre and all these great players. And the game, they'd lost the game before the game had even started. So it was really fun. I don't regret it at all. I'm sort of embarrassed that it got picked up on the microphone. The hardest thing about the whole thing was after it happened, and it was kind of cool, and I knew my teammates were fired up, and I thought it would help us. I knew I had to come to the sideline and see Coach Holmgren, and that made me very nervous.
You know what?
And he had his glasses, and he looked under, and that was the uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Some tells me he got that look from Holmgren quite a bit, even after that time, because, like you said, a quarterback who always took chances.
Oh, man, big time. And look, that's one of the things. Look, I think Holmgren, when he looked at a quarterback, because look at the guys he had the most success with, is Favre and Hasselbeck, right?
Yeah.
Kind of similar guys in the sense that they're kind of gunslingers. They kind of got that moxie to them. And
Matt knew, though, a little bit more than Brett when he needed to take care of the football.
Right.
And
right. That's, but I think Mike liked that quality in his quarterback.
Sure,
that he could go to that place. Yeah, because he knew that he could come from the other side of things, the more conservative mindset, you know, with the guys that were just ready to just let it all hang out and say, I want the ball, we're going to score, and bring that together to find the right level. Mm-hmm. And I think it worked out really well for them. And look, if you don't know that Matt Hasselbeck is going to kill it with the ESPN crew coming up here this next season, just listen to that again. Yeah. He's going to be a fantastic addition to that set. And I guess he's taking over for Ditka. Ditka, all-time NFL great, right? But I think I was ready for Ditka to move on.
Ready for something a little bit different. And yeah. Matt Hasselbeck, yeah, that's definitely going to be a guy that I will tune in to watch for pregame analysis or postgame analysis. And it's no-brainer by ESPN to bring a guy like Matt Hasselbeck in to be on their team.
For sure. About as much of a no-brainer as it is to put him in the Ring of Honor. Let's get it done.
Let's get it done. Get it done.
So, one other thing I wanted to bring up before we moved on too far here about our players that are free agents that we didn't talk about at all was Jermaine Kearse.
Sure.
And the reason we haven't talked about it is nobody's talking about him.
No. But the thing is with Jermaine Kearse, I mean, he's not one of those, I don't know, he's not a guy that I think is going to command that first day type money that are given out to receivers. Although there was the wide receiver for the Dolphins that had kind of been rumored to be a potential replacement for Kearse. Here, he was a guy that went yesterday, and I'm trying to remember his name, but I believe he went to the Titans. But there's kind of those middle tier wide receivers, and you did see some get paid. Now, I don't know if it's a strategy of Kearse at this point to be kind of the highest guy on the board that's left. But, just not a lot of talk about Jermaine Kearse out there. And maybe he's a guy that ends up ultimately coming back to the Seahawks, and I would be okay with that.
Well, we talked about a couple podcasts ago. There was two guys that we were interested to see how the rest of the league valued them.
Yeah.
And one was Sweezy, and the other was Kearse.
Mm-hmm.
And we've honestly already seen how the rest of the league valued Sweezy, and I think it was wrong. But they valued him at that level. And I think out of the two of them, I would have valued Kearse a little higher because of his clutchness. You know, I mean, even though he doesn't put up gigantic numbers, he doesn't run super fast. He's not super tall. He's not particularly strong. He doesn't jump out in any discernible way. He's an undrafted guy, but somebody that really just plays when it's time to ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised that he hasn't come off the market yet. And the fact that the longer this goes, the better the chance that you have to see Chop Chop come back and spend the majority of his career in the Pacific Northwest, which is where he belongs.
So, yeah. I'm kind of So part of me is okay with Kearse going because, you know, you have that clutchness factor with him, right? But you also know that Doug Baldwin has that clutchness factor. He can, he has that ability to tiptoe along the sidelines, get his toes down to make an important third down catch. You know that Tyler Lockett has that big play, deep ball catchability that Kearse is also showing.
Catchability.
Yeah. It is. Catchability. Yeah. And you know that Lockett has that too. And then with Jimmy Graham coming back, you really didn't see Kearse have those big games until Jimmy Graham went out for the season, right? So it's you kind of wonder how all those guys are going to fit in with getting the ball. At the same time, it's a guy that you really like having on the roster for a guy that you know that you can go to in crunch time, and he's going to come up with a big catch because we've seen it so many times. Whether it was, you know, either one of the NFC Championship games, you know, he had an amazing catch in the Super Bowl where he bounced off four different guys to go into the end zone. He has those big plays in him.
And that's why it surprises me that he's still on the board when you look at Mohamed Sanu being signed, when you look at Marvin Jones being signed, when you hear Kearse Hogan from the Bills is being courted by the Patriots, like they're trying to get a deal done there. I mean, these are all guys that I look at and I say, sure, talented, but I'm not sure I take any one of them over Jermaine Kearse. So it's interesting to see how the league is valuing him. And Maybe that is something that works in our favor. Every so often that happens, kind of like when Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill were undervalued by the league and it worked out in our favor. Maybe that'll work out here.
Yeah, Rishard Matthews is the guy with the Dolphins who thinking of. But he did go to the Titans. And, you know, there's guys that are out there, and maybe if people feel like Jermaine Kearse is just another one of those types of guys, and maybe he will miss out on a lot of the big money that's getting thrown around the league right now.
Yeah. So I know, Brandon, you were a little surprised by the dollar amounts that are being thrown around.
Holy smokes.
Really?
Well, you brought up Janoris Jenkins to the Giants. The fact that he got shut down corner money. Brock Osweiler getting $18 million to go to the Texans. That's a huge amount of money.
That is not a huge amount of money.
But for 4 years, for a guy that's played seven games, that's, you know, even Matt Flynn was surprised at the amount that Brock Osweiler got to go to the Texans, okay?
Look, Matt Flynn can be surprised at whatever he wants to, man, because he's got nothing but time while he sits there on his money that he got a big payday for that was even more than freaking Brock Osweiler, in the sense of Brock Osweiler has a lot more upside than Matt Flynn ever did. Look, if you look at the salaries for the quarterback position by per year, you know where Brock Osweiler comes in with this deal? Right about middle of the pack. He's in the same boat as Kaepernick, Tannehill, Bradford, Dalton, Matt Ryan's way above him. Tony Romo's in the same category. Look, I don't think that was too much money to pay a guy that has potential franchise ability, who's a young guy. Like, what is he, 24, 25?
See, I think catchability is a word, but not franchise ability. I think you're making things up now.
Catchability is not a word either. But yeah, take that ability. No, I think that was a fair market value. Now, the Janoris Jenkins deal, I think, for as far as a starting number one corner, I'm not surprised by the amount that somebody would pay for a number one corner. What I was surprised at is that they thought he was a number one corner. Yeah. Like I don't mind the amount. That made sense to me with the amount that the cap went up and the way that it goes up every year. It seems like every year everybody's so shocked that everybody's getting all this money. It goes up every year.
Yeah.
It goes up every year, but it's not a shocker. Okay. I'm just not shocked by that.
Here's another guy, though. Malik Jackson going to the Jaguars, getting Gerald McCoy money. I guess I don't put Malik Jackson in the Gerald McCoy, you know, J.J. Watt category. And here he is getting that level of money to play interior defensive line for the Jags.
Well, okay. I think, again, this is similar to Janoris Jenkins, right? Whereas I'm not surprised at that amount that you're going to pay a premium interior defensive lineman. What I am surprised is that somebody took just 1 year of tape and decided that's what he was when he was surrounded by two of the best rush ends in football and Derek Wolfe alongside of him. I mean, that's a guy that gets overpaid because he's a cog in the machine. See, that's a mistake. Remember when way back when Tampa won the Super Bowl, their strong safety, I can't think of the name for the life of me right now, but he was Super Bowl MVP, and he got way overpaid by a team that offseason. I think it was the Cowboys or something like that. He was out of the league in like 2 years. People do that all the time when the Super Bowl winning team, there's one or two guys that really stand out during that game, and then they get overpaid the next offseason and for, you know, way more than they're actually worth. And Malik Jackson's totally that guy. I guess it didn't surprise me. Somebody's going to bite on that.
Yeah, it surprised me that somebody bid on it. And then there were a few of those, like I said. So, but yeah, just a guy that surprised me. Marvin Jones going from the Bengals to Detroit for $40 million.
That's exactly what I was talking about with the curse thing. Like, I think curse is everybody as good as Marvin Jones.
He's not going to get $40 million though.
No, it's funny. I mean, that's why teams that win the initial free agency never win the Super Bowl.
No,
I mean, I the only time I can ever think of that happening was when the Packers stole Reggie White.
That's the last time it happened.
But that's the thing. I don't know. The only time I can see breaking the bank on a free agent is if they are a transcendent talent. You know what I mean? Like one of the absolute best to have ever done it. And he somehow comes available. Then you do it. For example, Peyton Manning's a good example of that just a couple years back, right? Mm-hmm. When he came, even though he's coming off the neck and all that, a transcendent talent, one of the best to ever have done it. And that worked out pretty well for them. Reggie White's one of those guys. But I'm not sure that, say, Olivier Vernon that the Giants just paid is Von Miller good.
No.
I don't know that he's that good, but yeah, he's going to get paid like that. I don't think he's J.J. Watt good. I don't know that he's one of the transcendent talents in the league right now.
Man, how much is Michael Bennett stewing at that Olivia Vernon signing?
Dude, like, don't sign a dumb deal. Like, I just have zero sympathy for him. I just do.
I have a little bit more than zero because I can. It would stink. It's like
sure,
when you.
Sure, but you did it to you. Take ownership of that.
Yeah, you have guys that kind of coach you through that process, too, and that's probably a good reason why he fired his agent. But still, you have buyer's remorse sometimes when you spend a lot of money on something and you realize it's not as great as what you find out that, there's another product out there that does the exact same, and I paid all this money for it when I could have paid this amount. It bums you out as a person.
Sure. Who do I blame for that? Me, for not doing my own dang research.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Like, Bennett's so mad at, you know, the organization and all that. Like, come on, man.
I don't think he's mad at the organization for it. I just think he's making it known that he wants a little bit more.
It's like buying the product like you did, like you just gave as an example, and then whining about it for the next 3 years. Like, just own it, man. You screwed up.
Like, here's one thing that I still remember. When I was a kid, Adam, I had Dan Marino rookie card. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, a really valuable card at the time. Yep. And I took it to a card shop and I saw it was a 19, I think like a 56. It was an old time baseball card, Bud Daly. And it was just so cool to me that it was like an old-timey baseball card to me at the time. I traded a Dan Marino rookie card for that Bud Daly baseball card. Just, a common average card, but from the 1950s. And I thought it was a cool deal at the time. To this day, it's in my memory bank, Adam.
You know, that's one thing. I was into the football cards, right? When I was your age, when you were your age, like we were doing it at the
same
time.
We were the same age at the same time. It was crazy.
Yeah. But the point being is, you'd go into all the card shops, right? And it's always some 30-year-old dude, 35, 40-year-old dude.
Like we are now.
Yeah. That's pulling fast ones on 12-year-olds all day. Like, what kind of guy does it take to be that guy?
Yeah, that's
jacked up. Like, where you walk in, they're like, oh, you're Barry Sanders rookie card? Well, I'll give you this 1946 guy who was a backups card, and again, you're like, oh, that's really cool. And then 5 years later, dude's making bank. Like, he's taking advantage of 12-year-olds all day. That should be illegal. There's something wrong with that.
There is something wrong with it. But you know who I have to blame? Myself.
Well, you were a minor then, so you can blame your parents.
Excellent.
All right, man. One last thing I think we want to talk about before we went to break was Cam Chancellor. And What happened to him over this last week?
Well, he was attempting to buy a gym and had the police called on him, which I tweeted out or posted on Facebook the 911 call. The gym apparently closed down, but people still inside. He went by to see about purchasing it, to check it out. Apparently, the whole group of folks that he had with him, I don't know if they were all at the door at one time, but it apparently was enough to frighten the clerks that were inside the building. The gals didn't want to let him in, ultimately called 911. And Cam Chancellor, not super happy about getting 911 called him when he was going to check out this gym. But it's just an interesting story here, listening to the 911 call and hearing the gal talk about how, they have a lot of problems with people with drugs in the area. But at the same time, it's like you have a guy with a group of other folks in a really nice car that just knocking on the door. We weren't there, so maybe we don't know the exact situation, but I don't know if it was as scary as it was made out to be on the phone.
Because it wasn't. You know, I mean, like,
I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt because I wasn't there, but I'm not.
I'm going to come down like a hammer on these stupid girls. Like, they really, I mean, really, they really did do the, oh my, big scary black dude, I'm calling the cops. Yeah, are you joking? Are you joking? Dudes, I promise you, Cam Chancellor isn't dressed like a bum who just got done, like, you know, waking up from, you know, having been passed out by doing heroin the last 8 hours, you know? Like, I'm sure he looked like he was, you know, showered because he's going over there to check out, you know, a business deal. So I'm sure he didn't show up looking like a hobo. And he's a good-looking dude on top of that. And like you mentioned, I'm sure he rolled up in a nice ride. I'm sure his friends all looked the part, too. I'm sure they weren't, like, threatening the door with rocks or something, you know, like trying to beat down the door. I'm sure he just knocked on the door.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's absolutely absurd. It's just a couple of just stupid girls, like stupid young girls. Like, yeah, that's what it was.
It does surprise me that they couldn't at least go over to the door and say, oh, hey, what do you want? Not open the door. You can talk to somebody through glass and find out what they're trying to do. Now, maybe it wasn't the best approach. Maybe maybe he didn't have the number of the guy who actually owned the gym. But it kind of seems like if you're going to do a business deal like that, you go, oh, hey, or maybe you call the business and say, hey, I want to come over and check it out. Is so-and-so going to be there? You know, they might maybe take a little bit different approach. So I'm still trying to give the girls the benefit of the doubt. I don't know why, Adam. I'm trying to explain the other side of the story, and there's no explanation for it.
No, because look, if the gym had been shut down, right, and there's just those two girls were there, I don't know what they were doing there. But
I don't know why you need to. If that's part of the problem, I think if you're a closed down gym and you're paying two people to work the counter of a business that's not even open,
why.
There's probably a reason why you went out of business.
Right. And so if there's nobody to call, really the only thing that you can do is go and knock on the door and be like, hey, I see you guys have shut down. I could be interested in taking this off your hands. Yeah. I mean, people do that all the time. People do that all the time. I think Cam is 1,000,000% in the right, 0% in the wrong. These girls are stupid.
Okay, I can get on board with that.
All right.
Well, the only other thing, Marshawn, you know, ghost riding a camel in Egypt was really fun to see. And I don't know if there's anything to say about that other than to say that it's out there and you should check it out.
Yes. Did we want to talk about Beast Mode still being on the roster at all?
we can talk about it. To me, it's a complete non-story, and Pro Football Talk trying to make it into a big deal because the Seahawks, they're carrying over his salary into the new league year rather than, you know, waiting for him to, you know, put him on the retired list. Or look, they don't have to. The fact that they're carrying over the money to the new year doesn't mean that he's automatically owed $11.5 million this year. He's not going to be paid if he's not going to play, and you have plenty of time to take the money off of the books. You still have, you know, he's due what, like $6.5 million this year. $5 million of it was roster bonus money, and that's money that probably Marshawn's going to keep. The Seahawks could go after it; they're probably not. So $6.5 million, and you don't even have your draft picks. So, you know, the draft isn't even till late April, early May. See, I don't even know exactly what day it is. I think it's late April, and you aren't going to be signing those guys until May anyway, to where you might be close to needing that money. To me, it's a non-story, and it's crazy that folks are trying to make such a big deal about it.
Yeah, because no deadline has been passed here.
Right.
Like there was no ramifications of them still having him on the roster whatsoever. In fact, there was the idea that it was somewhere around June 1st or something like that, depending on when they actually clear him off the books, whether they have to absorb the cap hit for him for this year just all at once, or if they can spread it out over the next 2 years or something along those lines.
Right. There was speculation of whether or not the $5 million, right, the bonus money, mm-hmm. of whether or not they could spread $2.5 million this year and the next year. And so that could be that. To me, that's a very valid and sensible reason why you might keep him on the roster and continue to keep him on the roster, not because you think that he's going to come back or that you think that he's going to go to somewhere else. It's just there's a reason for it. And we just the Seahawks aren't going to come out and say, oh, yeah, this is what we're doing.
Right. And not only that, even if the reasoning is we have until June 1st and we're just going to keep him on the roster just in case Marshawn gets a wild hair and says, nah, I'm coming back.
Yeah.
Exactly. Even if you don't think it's going to happen, why not? Like, if it's not hurting you.
Right.
I mean, why not? I mean, I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
I'm not predicting, but. You know,
but Marshawn, he isn't the type of guy either. Like, you didn't see Calvin Johnson come out and do a big press conference of his retirement where he gets
like
behind the microphone and you know, sobs and tears up. And Calvin Johnson put out a statement. Now, Marshawn Lynch, to him putting out his statement was the peace emoji with the picture of his cleats. Like, that was his statement. That's all he needed to say.
Yeah, I love it. You know, both that Calvin Johnson, mad props the way he went out too. And I mean, I understand Peyton Manning had to give a speech.
Oh yeah. And well, like Peyton didn't want to be out in the media.
Right.
Like Peyton is the guy that doesn't enjoy being in the media. Like I'm just surprised he didn't drop, you know, DirecTV, Budweiser and Papa John's references somewhere in his retirement speech.
Yeah. While he said he was going to drive off into the sunset in his Buick.
Right.
You know, like, it's just unbelievable, that guy. I mean,
is there a player that you'll ever remember more for just promoting, like, the random companies that he promotes?
He's one of the tops, man. He's one of the tops. And look, for those of you who don't get the bonus shows, like, we made the joke, like, this is your reprieve from the Peyton Manning Love Fest for, like, 2 days. God, you couldn't hide from it, man. I'm so glad it's over. So glad.
No, I avoided all NFL podcasts. Specific NFL podcasts for those couple days because yes, I was aware that Peyton Manning was retiring and I didn't need all of the Love Fest part of it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, man. What do you say we get to the back half of this beast?
Let's do it. Before we go there, let folks know about Doug Chancel Harry. He made up those shirts for us on booster.com, the Seahawkers podcast t-shirts. You can go there. It's booster.com/SHP. And yeah, I think shirts are $22, $24 if you want a 2XL or larger, and whatever shipping cost is too. But yeah, thanks to Doug for putting the logo on the shirts. Apparently, we had to take off the 12 for licensing reasons because the Seahawks doing the 12 copyright. I don't know. The Booster folks wouldn't put the 12 on there.
How can you copyright the number 12?
Well, I think it's 12 in combination with Seahawks colors. So that they're making the tie there.
So if I write 12 with a blue pen, am I in copyright violation?
Maybe. Maybe if you do blue and green.
I hate this country sometimes, man. I do.
But it's a cool design, even without the 12. Appreciate Doug taking extra time to modify it a little bit with me.
Yeah.
And,
But it still looks sweet. And if you want to look super duper fly, buy yourself one of those, and I promise you, if you go knocking on a door to buy a business, you won't have the cops called on you.
That's true.
They think you're a hobo. They'll think you're a sharp-dressed man. Or a lady.
Or a lady. Yeah. Yep, indeed. So, yep, check that out, booster.com/SHP. Seahawkers Podcast is the official podcast of the official Booster Club of the Seattle Seahawks. I know it's that time of year where the Booster Clubs are looking for Seahawker of the Year nominations. So if you're a member of one of the clubs, go ahead and ask your whoever's your president of your club to say, hey, Who can I nominate as Seahawker of the Year? And you know, maybe it's Adam now that he's going to be a member of the Montana Seahawkers.
I'm going to say charter member.
Charter member of the Montana Seahawkers.
Yeah. Just wanted to make sure it got the full thing there. So.
Yeah, that's important. That's key. Yeah. You want to be known as a charter member.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a little swag to that. A little swag.
I think so. Well, before we get going here, I wanted to thank a few folks on the Patreon page at patreon.com/Seahawkers podcast because we have a few new donors. Matthew Burdett put in a pledge here recently in the last couple of weeks. Christian, he called out to my challenge of donating your under a dollar for the number of your yes. favorite player. We got 4 cents, so big Hauschka fan, clearly. So Christian, because you were the only one to do it, you have to send me your address to gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com, and I'm going to send you a program, my friend, because you were the only one to do it. Then we have two more, Jeff Godfrey and Kevin Moore. To all of you for joining us on Patreon, welcome to the flock. Really glad that to have you guys on board to get the bonus shows. You know, listening to bonus shows it's a great way to if you download the Patreon app and you log in, you can get the bonus shows right through the app and listen to them there. It's a good way to listen. They're only about 15-20 minutes when we do the bonus shows. So I know a lot of people like to pause, be able to pause and stuff and pick up where they left off. But I think Patreon's a good place to listen to those shows too. Or if you're a member of the our premium member through our website at seahawkerspodcast.com/premium, there's a way to go through and get those extra episodes through there as well. So, yes, welcome to the flock, guys. Appreciate you. And Christian, send us an email. Anyone else can email us, too, at gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com. Catch us on Facebook, facebook.com/seahawkerspodcast, on Twitter, @seahawkerspod. And, of course, you can get our apps in the App Store. Just search out for Seahawkers Podcast.
Yeah, man, that's all great. We appreciate you guys a ton. And yeah, that's pretty funny, Christian, with the 4 cent donation, that being his favorite player in Hauschka. It's probably fitting that it's money, Hauschka, when he's donating money.
Steve, so, money, Hauschka.
Yeah, enjoyed that.
Well, speaking of Patreon, we had a comment a couple weeks back. I asked for off-season priorities, you know, who we might be looking to re-sign, which, how do you rank those guys, free agents that you'd like to see the team go after, kind of considering monetary constraints, and then positions that you'd like to address during the draft. And we got a response from Ross Wilberding, and it's interesting kind of looking at this list now that free agency has started, Adam, because his number one Seahawk that he wanted to re-sign, Jeremy Lane. And Seahawks got that done. Deshaun Shedd, you know, an exclusive rights guy. They got him. That was his number two. Sweezy now. But in parentheses, he said, on the cheap after a down year. And clearly, Sweezy not on the cheap. So I'm sure Ross is okay with Sweezy being gone at the particular number, $6.5 million per year. And then he has Jermaine Kearse and Ataba Rubin. And as we mentioned, Kearse still out there. The Seahawks get Rubin. I have to feel like Ross, along with some other fans, are feeling pretty good about where the Seahawks are with regard to those Seahawks players that they wanted to re-sign. And Patrick Lewis, John Ryan, Cooper Helfitt, Mr. T, a couple guys that he also lists outside of those guys and guys that we're kind of still waiting on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Moving on to his free agent want list. Here's a guy that number one on the list, Adam, was a guy that you mentioned, and with Russell Okung not being on Ross's top five of guys to re-sign, I think he's also looking at Kelvin Beachum at that left guard position or left tackle position.
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, a young guy, a lot of upside, who played well when he was playing, and we all know the ACL injury not nearly as dire as it was, say, 10 years ago with the advancements in medical science, something you can totally come back from, especially for a guy that playing a position that doesn't necessarily rely on speed, like a receiver or something of that nature. So I think that would be potentially a good pick, depending on what he's demanding on the open market.
Yeah. Number two, Alex Boone, a left guard, and looked like he's going to the Vikings. But yes, a guy we're familiar with who was on the 49ers offensive line for a while. But yes, he's going to Minnesota. Andre Smith, another guy that we talked about during the first half of the show at right tackle. Chris Long, a guy to fill in at the pass rush.
I have no interest in Chris Long.
No?
Nope.
You have interest in Chris Clemens, but not Chris Long.
Exactly. Yeah. I think Chris Long, you'd have to pay 2 to 3 times more. A guy that's production has dropped off every year the last couple years. And also, he's a Ram. I don't want him on my team. I hate that guy. No, you can stay off my team. Thank you very much. I'll take Chris Clemens back. Thank you.
I was happy to see the Rams just overpay. Doesn't it feel like they overpaid for Mark Barron at linebacker?
I don't know. He had a heck of a year last year, and yeah. He really does play that kind of hybrid spot well. I think that fits well for them. I'm not sure that that was an overpay, especially with the way they cleared cap space with getting rid of a bunch of guys.
Yeah, it just seemed interesting to me that they got him in a trade and then for almost nothing, and then turned around and paid him big. It was just surprising to me that he would have that much of a market outside of the Rams.
I think he would. I mean, he was a former first-round pick, too. I mean, that's a guy with some cachet. Not just because Tampa Bay didn't use him right doesn't mean he's a bad player.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then Donald Penn, another guy at that left tackle position.
Yeah, for the right money, sure.
Yeah. And Marvin Jones was on this list, which he said will probably be overpaid, which I don't want. And see, Ross has a lot of foresight on this list.
Yeah. He looked into his little football crystal ball here, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty well done.
Nick Perry, still a guy who's out there that could provide that interior pass rush potential, but another former Ram, Adam.
Yeah, not Nick Fairley. Is that who you're thinking
of? Oh, Nick Fairley. Oh, Nick, well, this says Nick Perry.
Okay, is that because he's
the linebacker, I was thinking Nick Fairley.
Yeah, Nick Fairley. I'm surprised he hasn't been snatched up yet after the year he had last year. He played very well, and a guy who was highly touted coming out of school. Maybe didn't live up to his potential with the Lions to a degree when he's playing with Sue. But I thought a guy who seemed to figure it out last year, and somebody who could be very productive. That's a guy that I wouldn't mind us picking up. He'd be a good depth guy at the right cost.
Yeah, I think Ross is actually referring to Nick Perry, though, the Packers linebacker / defensive end. So as a guy that could fill in behind Bruce Irvin.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, yeah, I can see that fit, I suppose. You betcha.
So maybe some more to watch, since clearly Ross has the foresight. And then he has some draft options here that maybe we'll talk about on a show down the road.
Oh yeah, we got a full draft thing coming up for you here at some point. I've been doing my research, man.
I know this is cool because I haven't, and
we'll have a couple little nuggets for you.
Yeah, no, I'll get into it though too. I've been there's a lot of interesting websites out there where you can see. You can kind of, knowing what the Seahawks look for in the draft now, you kind of get an idea of kind of the Seahawks type players. And mm-hmm. So I think we'll be able to at least find some guys that maybe they'll look at.
Have some potential anyway.
Yeah. A couple questions coming in through Facebook from Ellie. Thoughts on the Texans spending $126 million on 3 players? And this goes back to that idea of winning free agency. The Texans, one of those teams, but at the same time, the Texans, they have the defense in place, right? And they just needed some of those pieces on the offensive side of the ball. So getting Osweiler, getting Lamar Miller from the Dolphins, it feels like maybe they could make a push to actually at least win a playoff game now, right?
And they signed the tackle Nate Allen? Was that the third player that they
paid? I think that might have been the third player. And okay. So having it was definitely all on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah. So a couple thoughts about that. I talked about the idea you only pay big if it's a transcendent player, and I think that's true for every other position except for quarterback. If you have the opportunity to get a potential franchise guy who's coming up on his first deal, that in a way, I mean, the Broncos botched coming out into free agency with Brock Osweiler this year. That's a unique situation.
They botched that before free agency even started, though.
I know. Yeah, with benching him for Peyton and
right.
Everything that
they could have won that Super Bowl with Brock behind center.
Look,
and I think you know, people are making, oh, Brock Osweiler got his feelings hurt because he was benched for Peyton Manning. No, it was because he was the guy. He hadn't done anything wrong. And if your team is going to do that to you, where's the loyalty? Why should I feel like I'm loyal to the Broncos? Because I was doing my job. I was out there. I could have led this team to the Super Bowl. I'd feel the exact same way if I were Brock Osweiler.
This isn't about feelings. This is about business. And I'll tell you exactly my point. When you bench Brock Osweiler for Peyton Manning going down that playoff stretch and through the Super Bowl, because let's all be clear, Peyton Manning stunk through the playoffs. He wasn't any good.
He didn't turn the ball over, so there was that.
He turned the ball over in the Super Bowl.
And the thing is,
you can't tell me Brock Osweiler couldn't have provided that at least that same level of play, right?
Right.
If everything else breaks the exact same way that it did for the Broncos, and Brock Osweiler is in there instead of Peyton Manning, they still win the Super Bowl, right?
I think so.
I think we can all agree that. So Brock Osweiler, if he's the starter, he wins the Super Bowl. Now, he's the Super Bowl winning quarterback coming into a contract year. John Elway and Gary Kubiak cost him tens of millions of dollars by putting him on the bench because they couldn't hurt the ego. Talk about hurt feelings of Peyton freaking Manning.
Yeah.
And they risked the championship to be sure not to have a PR disaster. And in the process, cost Brock Osweiler tens of millions of dollars. Yeah, I'm giving John Elway the finger too, using him as leverage to just up my price with the Texans, which is exactly what Brock's agent did. And the second that John Elway finally realized, oh, they're just using me here, he cut bait and showed his hurt feelers by talking about how he wants guys who actually want to be Broncos and are, you know, blah, 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 and, you know, some not-so-veiled shots.
Yeah.
So, look, the Texans picking him up, I think, is huge. I think they grossly overpaid for Lamar Miller. But I think their signing on the offensive line was a solid one. But when you have a defense like the Texans do, which is a top three unit in the AFC, basically what they did by signing Brock Osweiler is they flip-flopped the future of the Texans and the Broncos for next season. Because now you have a very good defense, just like the Broncos, because the Broncos defense isn't going to be as good as last year.
No.
It's going to take a step back, and not a huge one, but they're going to take a step back. They're losing dudes, and that's how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to be about on par with the Texans. But now the Texans will actually have a quarterback, and the Broncos are going to be trying to work around Kaepernick or RG3.
Yep.
It switched the entire AFC around. It handed the AFC crown next year to the New England Patriots. That's what it did.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that
but
happening.
I think the
NFC West crown is up for grabs. Because now I think Oakland is in the conversation, and I think the Chiefs are still
AFC
in the conversation.
West?
Yeah, the AFC West, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think looking back, I mean, not to get too much into Broncos stuff, but the Osweiler thing was one of the more interesting
things. It was the biggest story, I think, of that day because of the impact that it had on the Broncos, the fact that they lost Peyton Manning and they lost Osweiler, and now they're down to a third-string quarterback as the only guy on the roster. It was incredible to just... I think as a fan of football, I mean, you just had to kind of... Because it hadn't happened since... Go back to when the Baltimore
year,
Ravens...
Man? That's exactly right. The 2000 Ravens. Does anybody remember the 2001 Ravens?
Nope.
No, don't. Is that drawing a blank for you, Brandon? Well, that's because they went 10-6. They started Elvis Gerbach, who was supposedly going to be an upgrade, who was maybe marginally, but that was his last year in the league. He retired after that year. They went 10-6, won a wild card game, were second in their division, and were a second round exit in the playoffs. That's the Broncos' future going into this next year. It, because of the way that they botched their future franchise guy. And if you want to sit here and tell me this is all part of John Elway's genius and he didn't want him, he wanted him. The offer that he made to Brock was within a million or two of what the Texans did. It was real tight. If they had a good relationship, Brock's probably back in Denver rather than moving on to Texas.
Exactly. And, well, this kind of goes into the next question. Adam Kofi asks, the Broncos D 2015 was number one. Seahawks were number two. I felt like there was a noticeable gap between us and them. What did they have that we didn't? They were able to close out games, get that key turnover, and cover tight ends. They had zero help from Peyton, yet they won the Super Bowl. Was it scheme, personnel, or something else? Can we get back to that level?
That's a great question, and it speaks very much to what we were just talking about. The 2000 Ravens, right? were one of those exceptional all-time defenses.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, they get picked apart in free agency a little bit. They retain their key guys. But that depth, the depth where you have starters playing backups, like like good starters playing backup minutes and being backups in your system.
Yeah.
Now move on to other teams. Now, are they transcendent players? No, but they're good quality starters.
Sure.
And now your backups are league average backups. And so the depth isn't quite there. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to fall off the map as a defense. You're still going to be good the following year. And that's the difference you saw between the Broncos this year and the Seahawks this year. Much like when the Seahawks won the Super Bowl in 2013, that was one of the all-time smothering defenses, right?
Right.
That's because you had really quality starters as backups. We saw, you know, Walter Thurman go. I mean, just go down the list, right?
Yeah. Jeremy Lane was a backup. Walter Thurman was your slot guy. You had, you know, Byron Maxwell, who hadn't gotten paid yet. You had even guys in the, you know, Jeron Johnson. Was a guy who
Red Bryant leave after that.
Clinton McDonald, pass rushing from the inside.
Yeah, if you lose all those really quality depth guys, now you're still going to be a good defense, but you're not going to be that same smothering dominant defense that can win games just by itself.
Yeah.
And that's what cracks me up about Bronco fan right now is, oh, we won the chip last year with subpar quarterback play. We'll just do it again. Will ya? No, you won't, because you're losing Malik Jackson, you're losing Danny Trevathan, you're losing Brandon Marshall, you're losing key cogs.
Yeah.
And you'll still be a good defense, but you won't be a team that can win a championship just on that. And that's the defense. Yeah, for us to get to that next level, it is possible. But again, a couple more solid drafts and some great second-tier signings, and you're right there.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to mention is that to me, to get back to that level, it is going to take draft and how those guys that were drafted in previous years, how they're going to develop. You know, how much is Frank Clark going to turn it on in his second year? You know, is Ty Smith going to develop into a guy that can be a good cover guy, or Therald Simon having other guys within the secondary and guys that can weather the Seahawks, you know, when inevitability of injuries, it's going to happen, right? And so you have those guys in backup positions to be able to fill in and do great things. You know, one guy that we didn't mention on that 2013, Malcolm Smith, you know, he was the MVP of the Super Bowl, right? And that was a guy, he was not a starter for the Seahawks, and yet he had a huge game in the Super Bowl. So yep. having guys like that is critical to having a championship defense.
And you're bound to have it picked off, that depth, when you're the champion. I mean, that's just how it goes for every single team. That's why it's so hard to stay on top.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so the arrogance of Bronco fan right now that they're just going to go back. Oh, it's fine. We're just going to ride that great defense again. Sure you will.
Yeah, with who? With Kaepernick? With RG3? Who are you going to get?
Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever, the Travis Simeon, if that's their third string. Is that his name? I don't remember.
Yeah, and the thing that's hilarious to me is, oh, I'm glad we didn't pay Brock that kind of money. What, second-tier level, like, money? You're glad you didn't pay him that? All right, you're telling me you'd rather have Colin Kaepernick as your starter now, who makes more money right now in his current contract than per year than Brock Osweiler does with his new deal? He makes $1 million more per year. So, it's not an upgrade.
All right, well, I think that does it for comments, Adam. On to do better. What do you got, Adam?
All right, man. My do better, be a little short and sweet, but it's for NFL reporter Rand Getlin. And I really honestly hadn't heard much about him coming into this free agency period. But
oh, you hadn't? Yeah, he's been breaking news. He's getting up there with the Adam Schefters of the world.
Yeah,
Glazers of the world.
He's taking an interesting approach to it. I'll give him that. I mean, when you use the term news, I guess we'll use that real loosely with some air quotes, because this is a tweet that he sent out like first little bit of free agency regarding J.R. Sweezy. Quote, for offensive guard J.R. Sweezy, teams who have expressed interest: Bucks, Falcons, Lions, Dolphins, Saints, 49ers, Jags, Bears, Jets, others.
Others.
Throws in others at the end because he didn't name all, because you only have so many characters on Twitter. You can't just name every single team as having interest in it. So I'm just going to throw in others at the end. That's not news. That's beyond. That's so ridiculous. Like, who's interested in your player? Well, you know, this team, that team, that team. Well, then all the rest of the other teams. This is so stupid, man. Like, that's not even part. Who puts that out? Like, how do you put that out and be like, yeah, there's a nugget for you?
That Here's the ridiculous. Teams that aren't just interested in J.R. Sweezy.
Which ones are those? Because, you know, that could be any of them by that tweet. I thought it was stupid. It's such lazy journalism. And, like, that's the problem with the Twitter part of free agency now. Like, everybody's burning up the Twitter feed with every little stupid rumor. And not only that, the rumors, like, they start their own by just saying, well, everybody's interested. You know, by listing off every team in the book, it's stupid. Rand Getlin bothered me. Do better.
Rand Getlin was the guy who broke the Osweiler to the Texans.
Did he now?
He did. So
yeah? Where did the Texans sign him, and then the Dolphins and the Jets and then the Bucks and then the others too?
Those are the others that were interested, I'm sure.
Oh,
but,
right.
Okay. Getlin did break that news of Osweiler to the Texans, so got to give him that much. Now, one guy that actually broke some interesting news that made news that actually didn't happen was at Uncle Chaps on Twitter, who tweeted under he tweeted with Jay Glazer's photo and his name, and this is why it's my do better. ESPN went with this, that Olivier Vernon had signed with Jacksonville for 4 years, $75 million, based on this tweet that wasn't even Jay Glazer. They attributed it to Jay Glazer. Now, there's all this stuff going around on the internet yesterday. Everybody's hungry to be the one that breaks the story. And they couldn't even bother checking to see if it was at Jay Glazer in the tweet. They just saw the picture and the name and decided to go with it. ESPN, gosh, you know, and it took them a while to realize their mistake. Jay Glazer, he had a funny tweet after, says, "Damn, I finally get credit from ESPN and it's not even from my real account. Damn, so close. I kid, but only because it's funny." So ESPN, for going with a tweet from a guy and attributing the source to a guy who isn't even the guy, do better.
Man, it was a sad week in journalism. It was a sad
You know it was going to happen, though. You know it was going to happen.
Golly, man. Like, everybody, I don't understand the fervor to be first to break a story. Like, I mean, either you have it or you don't. Like, I don't get it.
Well, if you're trying to make a name for yourself to get into the crowd of the Adam Schefters and the Jay Glazers, because those are the guy, when you see the thing, as I watch, as we talk, you know, through this free agency period, Adam, I have my Twitter up and I'm seeing Ian Rappaport. You know, if I see a note from Ian Rappaport saying X player is going to X team, at mm-hmm. this point, he's made enough of a name for himself that I see that tweet. And if he's saying it, I expect that it will eventually happen, even though it's only an initial report, right? But because he's broke so many stories like that have, you know, come to fruition, you that's now a name that you trust when it comes across the ticker, right?
If you mean by names that you trust, seeing that tweet and then seeing another article from another person and then maybe seeing another article from a third source, like from the agent or something like that, so that you confirm the whole thing and that you know that it's an actual truth, then yeah, then I trust it. Because right. instead of just being, you know, Adam Schefter and just being first, I would much rather make a name for myself like Walter Cronkite, you know, and actually go find the facts, do the work, and then be certain when you do the report rather than be gotcha guy.
But like, that's what these guys are supposed to be doing when they report news, right? A guy like Ian Rappaport's supposed to hear from, you know, whether it's the agent or the player, confirm it, you know, with a source within the team, so you at least have two sources. That's what these guys are supposed to be doing before they put out even a tweet, if they are a quote-unquote a reporter, right?
Yes,
I mean, that's how journalism works. As far
doing.
As, I mean, we went to journalism school, and when we learned how journalism works, and at least that's what part of it that I remember. That was like the basics of it, right?
Right. That's what you are supposed to do. Yet somehow it happens so very rarely.
It does.
It
so
me.
For ESPN to go with that, that's my do better.
Yeah, do better for sure. All right, man. On to better at life. Who you got for better at life than Skip Bayless, Brandon?
For me, better at life is none other than the new champ, Adam. Misha Tate, the new
Shut
women's
up,
bantamweight champion of the UFC. And, you know, I saw the picture of her with blanketed with her 12 flag. And I didn't actually see the match because, you know, paying money to watch UFC, maybe not within my budget. But knowing that she came out and as a member of the 12s, and then the reason why she got on my radar for Better at Life was her press conference after after she won the championship. She, you know, sitting there with her new shiny belt on the podium. And what did she say that she wanted to do? Totally unprompted, was raise the 12 flag at a Seahawks game. And this, Adam, it needs to happen. Misha Tate, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Misha is a legit 12, man. Like, I follow her on Instagram.
Yeah.
And she's always, you know, at the stadium or hanging out with Sean Alexander or Doug Baldwin or something, you know, like, she's a legit 100% fan from the Pacific Northwest. And here's the extra sweet part that give Misha Tate some props. The gal that she beat to bring home the belt, Holly Holm.
Yes.
She is none other than a Broncos fan.
It felt so fitting. Extra sweet to just know that you got the belt from a Broncos fan.
Yeah. So that, I agree with you, Brandon. Misha Tate, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Misha Tate, super cool. Heard an interview with her today. And, you know, just the fact that she's gone through, I know she's lost to Ronda Rousey at least once, maybe even multiple times.
I think twice.
I think you're right. And to be the type of person that comes back after, and she said herself that she didn't know if she'd ever get another title shot again, because with losing twice to Ronda, if Ronda doesn't lose that match to Holly Holm,
right,
she doesn't get a chance. She doesn't get another chance at the championship belt having lost twice to Ronda. But the fact that Holly Holm beats Ronda Rousey, now Misha Tate gets a chance for the championship. She felt like going into that, she said she felt like this was her time. And for her to do it in the way that she did it, too, to fight into the fifth round and to
choke her out,
to choke her out. And that was that was something. Holly not even submitting. And it was interesting. She said she listening to her interview here recently on Jim Rome, and just the amount of respect that she had for Holly Holm trying to fight through it. And it just Misha Tate, super cool. And yes, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah. And she's got a new podcast, too, that she's doing. So check that out, folks. You'll enjoy it.
Cool. Well, what you got, Adam?
My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for another guy that with Seattle ties. That is none other than Nate Robinson, the NBA basketball player, former UW basketball player and former UW football player as well. Little known fact, played some corner.
Nate Robinson, played for his freshman year for the Huskies.
For the Huskies. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Nate Robinson, shame on you. he is one of the more entertaining personalities in all of sport. He's a little guy. He's like 5'10", but he's won the dunk contest 3 times. I think he's the only dude to ever win the dunk contest
Super
3 times.
Super athletic guy.
Oh, my Lord. Dude has hops for days and just ripped and super strong for his size. Like, he's an athletic specimen. And yeah, I remember him being at the Richard Sherman softball game 2 years ago and being hilarious.
Yes.
Like he's one of the more entertaining dudes around. Anyhow, he announces today that he is going to try out for the NFL at corner.
I love it.
And he's going to try to make a squad. And if there's any dude that can do it, I think it's him. And not only that, in his announcement, he had a former UW coach, football coach. I've been poor on names today, man. Oh, who the heck was it? Not a coach during his days there. But anyways,
the guy before Sarkisian, I would guess.
Or was that Tyrone Willingham that was before Sarkisian? Guy before Willingham.
Okay.
Anyhow, he was a guy there that was his coach when he was UW. He said the only player he's ever seen in his life that could possibly do this, the one and only, is Nate Robinson. And he had Mercedes Lewis, who he played against in college, come out and talk about it and say that, yeah, man, this dude's a game wrecker. You know, he could actually do this. And
yeah,
it's the dude's all full of fight and he's feisty and he's super quick. I could see him being a successful slot corner, and he's not even that old. I don't think. I think
he's 31.
Like 31. Yeah.
Or 30, he'll be 32 in May.
Okay. He's got a shot, man. He's got a shot. And I'm rooting for him. I like the gumption. I like the idea of just trying something you've never done before and really pushing yourself and reinventing yourself. Nate Robinson, better at life than Skip Bayless, hands down.
Hands down, yeah. Rick Neuheisel, the UW coach that I think you were trying to pull.
Man, that was tough. That was tough.
It's okay. When you get up in your 30s, Adam, you know, it makes it tough.
Yeah, up in my 30s and, you know, drinking as much beer as I do, it certainly doesn't help.
Yeah.
Killing the brain cells.
That'll happen. That'll happen. But yeah, Nate Robinson, I wouldn't put it past him to, I mean, yeah, he's getting up there, but just the fact that he's even trying it, I think, is the important thing, because why not?
It's so admirable. I mean, this is a guy that can make himself look like a total idiot in front of other professional athletes, but he's got the cojones to just go out there and do it, man. Like, I like it. I really do.
Yep. Nate Robinson, a former 12th man flag raiser himself. So,
yeah, exactly.
Definitely a guy within the Seattle community that I think people, if you don't know him, you should.
Yeah, shame on you. Like I said, you're doing yourself a disservice.
All right, Adam. Well, I think that does it for this week's show. Good show with all the free agent news, and I'm sure we'll be back in a couple weeks to talk about even more kind of the lesser known names within free agency. By then, maybe we'll know where Jermaine Kearse is going, whether he goes or stays. Russell Okung, that may go on longer through free agency, especially if he's going to go elsewhere. I see that taking a little bit longer based off of the his shoulder issues and passing a physical with another team. But we should, and maybe some of those other players who we know and love, like John Ryan and Mr. T, Will Tukuafu, all guys that we expect to see where they go over these next few weeks.
Absolutely, and maybe even next week we'll put out a Picks and IPA show. So for those of you that like to hear us all talk about everything that's gone down in the league, because holy smokes,
there's a lot. That could be a long show.
Yeah, we're going to try to get that out next week. We'll go from there.
All right. Well, with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks!
Go Hawks!
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.